Sam said. Fortunately, I spoke semi-fluent Pinniped. He was asking for a fragmentary order, or in other words, what's the plan? Rig, find, terminate.
Romeo Foxtrot Tango it is. Sam got out of the car.
I'd had to pull a lot of stuff out of Honeybear's trunk to accommodate Sam's gear. The Barrett probably wasn't going to be used, so there went the need for all the 50 cal. I hadn't been sure if it would be open country or closed, so I had my M14 and the Uzi. Despite the fact that this was pure open country, I went with the Uzi. We'd probably find them around houses. I threw my vest on over my armor, zipped it up, then attached the Uzi to it. Sam was rocking the Car 15 on a single-point sling. Last, I retrieved Mo No Ken.
I gotta ask.
Don't, I said. Just watch.
Your job, if it comes to close action, is to shoot things to slow them down and let me handle it.
Try for headshots if you can make them. Sam just shook his head like I'd said something stupid.
I'll try and manage.
Especially the whites. If they've got revenants, same thing. Whites are stronger, savage, and can paralyze you with a touch. Revenants are going to look more like people and can use weapons, but their movements are jerky. They're like automated flesh robots. Whenever possible before an op, I stretch. Seems silly. It's like the pissing thing. I'm one of those guys who fights three-dimensionally. Up, down, sideways, around. I didn't stretch long, but it was long enough to get out the road kinks. And I'd stretched that morning and after each meal, so I was pretty limber. Sam simply grabbed some extra mags and stuck fresh dip in his lip. Then we loaded back up, after taking a piss. Sam already knew about that one. By the time we were rolling, the pendant was moving. So was our target. I kept the lights off and drove by the moonlight. I had NVGs if I needed them, but the rubber straps were a bitch to put on. Sam had his stupid cowboy hat on and was holding his NVGs up, taking a look around from time to time. We found the target on the outskirts of Medill. There was a white panel van parked outside the house, and the front door was already busted open. We could hear the screaming from inside through the open windows. Someone came out the front door, holding a shotgun. Possibly human, possibly a revenant.
Target, I said, driving Honeybear right into the yard.
Before I'd finished my warning, Sam stuck the car out his window and fired. From a moving car, in the dark, nearly 100 yards away, Sam dropped him with a headshot. Yeah, the newbie would manage. We stopped and bailed out of the car. The body was already trying to get up. Leaking brains be damned.
Revenant, mine.
I swept my sword from the sheath.
I'm going in, Sam said.
This revenant was new. Fast and strong, but not real agile and not particularly bright. It was reaching for its dropped shotgun. Blood sprayed in the moonlight as I ran past, swinging Mo No Ken. Then I followed Sam through the door. My partner was already shooting. A car is really loud inside a small living room. A white was dragging a brown-haired girl by her hair towards the door through the living room as I entered. Sam had knocked one of its eyes out and half its skull off. I didn't even slow down. One slash down and the hand holding the girl's hair was still clutching it, but on the floor. Slash and one leg was gone. Slash and the head was flying. We swept through the house. A human male had been pouring kerosene on the kitchen floor. He dropped his can and went for a pistol stuffed in his waistband. Sam shifted over and put two in his heart. Since cultists had a tendency to rise from the dead, I moved up and slashed as he fell. Blood and kerosene mingled on the floor from the spilled containers. Another white was in the upstairs hallway. It was just leaving one of the bedrooms.
From the screaming, I had expected it to be covered in blood, but neither seemed to have killed anyone yet. We didn't wait for it to change its mind. Sam riddled it with bullets. The white slammed into the wall, but it was damn near impossible to finish one of these off with a gun. "Hold on," I moved past Sam. As the white charged, I turned to saber stance, slashed both its wrists, and drove the point of Mono Ken through its eye socket. That didn't kill it, but it sure as hell slowed it down. It gave me enough time to pull my sword out and do a quick and tight slash. Off with their heads. Also doesn't kill them. You have to burn them to be sure. But as long as you keep the head and body separated, they're pretty much useless. So I punted the head down the stairs as Sam cleared the rooms. Sort of tingles your foot when you kick a white, but doesn't paralyze. Pro tip. The family was alive. They were all paralyzed from the whites. The fuckers were gonna burn them alive in their own beds.
Clear!
Sam looked out the bedroom window.
The van's gone.
The rest of the kidnappers had bailed while we'd been fighting their whites.
These folks gonna be okay?
The paralysis will wear off. I ran for the stairs. We have to catch that van. Sam was right behind me.
You're not half good with that sword, are you?
Bit, I said. We can't let them get too far ahead.
We've still got the tracker.
Odds are one of these was the vessel, I said.
Shit.
When we got downstairs, I paused to kick the white's head again into the front hallway. Then found the other one and rolled it towards the front door. Then both of them got kicked out the front door. Did I ever mention I used to play soccer? Both heads soared into the neighboring yards. Let them try to join up with the bodies now. I added the revenant's head for good measure. Made it across the road with that one.
Which way did they go?
I asked as we got back in the car.
That way,
Sam said, pointing behind us. I spun Honey Bear around in a donut and handed him my sword.
Wipe and sheath that, would you? Watch your fingers.
Check it out. Tracker's still working.
Sure enough, Madame Courtney's little amulet was still swaying. We pounded up Main Street in a cloud of dust and a hail of gravel, and Sam had to start singing.
Dirt Road Main Street,
he sang, lustily and badly.
She walked off in bare feet.
I got perfect pitch, you fucker, I said.
Think they're singing the same song? Sam asked.
There were taillights way ahead of us. They are not getting away. They had a big head start, but there was no way a Chevy van was going to outrun Honey Bear. I took the turn left onto Highway 70 in a spray of gravel. This time of night, there was virtually no traffic. I put my foot down. The road was more or less straight, and I watched it, the van, and my compression meter until I got to the right poundage. Then, I hit the big red button.
You got nitrous in this thing?
Sam bellowed in delight.
Fuck yeah, I got nitrous.
I'm gonna pass them. I was gaining on the van and still accelerating.
Then get past them. Then you lean out and hit them with that law in the back seat. Right in the engine block.
Might not be many people to question.
MCB can hire a necromancer to question them after they're dead, but they are not getting away.
Except we don't know if they got any hostages out of that house before we got there,
Sam pointed out. He was right.
Shit.
Just stick on them.
The van suddenly slowed, braked, and turned onto a side road.
And now we're losing them again,
Sam said. Hang on. I turned off the nitrous, hit the parking brake, and did a moonshiner's turn. Then we were headed back their way again. The side road was dirt again and went straight on to nowhere. The washboard effect was rattling the hell out of Honey Bear. I wasn't sure what they were thinking of doing, but I doubted it was good.
Get ready for a furball when we get up to them, I said.
This is probably going to involve gunplay, so you'll be more at home than I.
Gunfights I can handle, Sam said. You can leave the Highlander katana in the car.
You watch that movie?
I fucking love that movie, Sam said. There can be only one.
Ahead of the van, I spotted the lights of an oil rig. There was a tractor trailer parked there, and a bunch of figures milling around. Looks like our kidnappers weren't traveling alone. The van slammed on the brakes, the doors flew open, and several people jumped out. From the way they were greeted, the people waiting with the semi were definitely their allies. The bodies passing in front of the headlights were moving in a jerky, twitchy manner.
Revenants, I said. Needing decapitation. Looks like you've got an excuse to bring a sword to a gunfight, McLeod.
There were muzzle flashes ahead. Luckily, revenants were terrible shots, but they were shooting a lot. Bullets smashed into my grill. One headlight went out. Honeybear's window cracked. Sam leaned out the window and started shooting like crazy. Only from their reactions, he was actually hitting them. Rather than stop in the open and get pinned down, I drove right through the revenants. The first one got clipped and flew off into the weeds. The next went right under the bumper, and I could feel it crunch under the tires and undercarriage. I hope that one didn't break my oil pan. I hit the brakes and slid in sideways behind the van. A girl had been dragged from the back. A man dressed in black was wrestling her around, trying to use her as a human shield. Two more armed men came running out from behind the van. Sam was out of Honey Bear before it had even stopped moving. In a flash, he raised the car, fired two shots, then shifted over and fired two more. Both gunmen fell. He must have run dry because he immediately dropped the carbine and drew his pistol. The last cultist put a knife to the girl's throat and began screaming his demands, just as Sam put a .45 through the bridge of his nose. No hesitation. They'd gone down so fast the dust from Honey Bear hadn't even caught up to us yet. The girl was still standing in the headlights, stunned, kidnapper's blood all over her nightgown. The last two humans had climbed into the tractor trailer. It began rumbling off. Were they seriously trying to escape in that thing? Yes, they were. It began to rumble towards us. I realized that among other things, it could crush Honey Bear like a tin can. I needed to stop that truck fast. A badly broken revenant came limping up as I got out, so I took it down with two swipes of Mono Ken, then reached into the back seat and took out one of the laws. I extended the tube and aimed it at the truck's grill.
Shit!
Sam realized what I was doing, grabbed the girl, and pulled her behind the van so she wouldn't get hit with shrapnel. The rocket exploded and shredded the front of the truck. The engine began to burn as it came to a stop. None of the dead had been Thornton. Madam Courtney's warrior Loas were rejoicing tonight, but this didn't feel complete yet. Alpha and Omega. I knew I still had something I needed to do. The truck was partially engulfed in flames when I got the door open and pulled the driver out. He had been hammered by the explosion, intestines spilling out of his enormous fat gut. I didn't bother with kindness. Not for the likes of him. I tossed him out of the truck onto the ground. The passenger was a girl, dead as she was gonna get, short of the roasting her body was about to endure. I recognized her. Sherry Harvey. 15. Probably 17 now. One of the sleepover party from Pueblo, whom Adam Courtney had declared lost to the darkness. Son of a bitch. I jumped down to the ground and looked down at my only brother. Well, hello, Thornton. Long time no see.
I need a hospital,
Thornton gasped. He was trying to fit his intestines back in his gut. Seriously? I said. You have to know the penalty for what you've been doing, and that it has nothing in the way of appeal. I'm going to get paid for killing you and your girlfriend. So I gotta ask you, bro. What the fuck?
Even for you, stealing little girls is low. And you're about the lowest sack of shit I know.
Chad? Thornton said.
I realized he hadn't even recognized me. Yeah, Thornton. It's Chad. Now, again. What the fuck? Kidnapping virgins? Why?
Fuck you, you little bitch! Thornton shouted. Get me a doctor. You have to help me. I'm your brother.
Oh, wrong answer. The fire from the destroyed engine was basically contained under the body of the truck. I reached down, grabbed a fistful of his intestines, and pitched them in the fire. Thornton had been my nightmare growing up. So abusive, I still carried the physical scars, much less the emotional ones. Despite that, if I didn't need the information, I wouldn't have done it. But later, I had to admit to my father confessor it felt good to get the bastard back. I had to say a lot of rosaries. Not for doing it, but for it feeling good. Thornton started screaming. There are nerve endings in intestines. I pulled the intestines out of the fire like reeling in a line. Want me to do that again? Answer me.
You're why? It was you.
That makes no sense at all.
Remember Debbie Southfield?
Who? I asked, confused.
Debbie Southfield. My prom date.
Oh. That had come out of left field. Cute brunette? Kind of chubby? He was getting weak from blood loss, going into shock.
She spent the whole time at the house talking to you, and the whole rest of the night talking about how cool you were. You were 4 years younger than I was, but every time a girl came around, it was all about Chad, Chad, Chad. Chad's so dreamy. Thornton, your brother, is really cute. You got all the girls, you little fucker. I had to work for it. You just smiled and they all came running. Why do you think I fucking hate them so much?
What the fuck? That's... You blame me for kidnapping girls? Young girls? Killing their families? Human fucking sacrifice? I shouted. How much for virgins, Thornton? And what did you do with the girls who weren't virgins? Rape them?
Of course,
Thornton said, as if any of this made sense.
And sacrifice them? Non-virgin sacrifices work for most things. Sell them to vamps. 20,000 for a virgin. 5,000 for a non-virgin. Even I wasn't willing to rape the virgins for that much cash.
$20,000 for a virgin? I said. That's a lot of money.
Any idea how hard it is to find a virgin these days?
Thornton said. Then he died. And surprisingly enough, didn't rise. I took his head off just to be on the safe side. While I'd been interrogating my psychotic scumbag brother, Sam had checked the trailer and discovered a couple more girls tied up inside. Kidnapped hitchhikers Thornton had found on the way. He got them out before the whole thing burned down. After we'd hacked up the revenants and tossed the still-moving pieces into the truck fire, Sam joined me back at Honey Bear.
So I take it that pork-crackling-looking fat ass was your brother?
I didn't really want to talk about it. Yeah.
Seems kind of messed up. Funny, though. All that long-ass drive here, and you never once mentioned to me we might be chasing your own blood relative.
Does it matter?
Beats me.
Sam shrugged.
My brothers are pretty cool. I can't really see any of them taking up necromancy as a hobby. Well, maybe Scott. But he joined the Coast Guard, so he's a little touched.
You don't seem surprised it was my brother.
That weird red-headed kid. Milo, I think it is. He gave me a heads up who might be behind this. He wanted me to keep an eye on you. I think he was worried you'd go off the deep end batshit revenge crazy and damage your immortal soul or some such.
That was nice of him to worry, I said. What are you going to tell Milo?
I'll say it went great. All you did was yank out his guts like a garden hose. Seems like a rational, proportionate response to me. But you did kill your own brother. You want to talk about it?
Not at all.
Good. I really ain't the guy to talk about feelings and shit. So how about we finish cleaning up this mess, find the nearest bar, and get stinking drunk?
Sam Haven was going to make a great monster hunter. Oh, boy, was this a lot of excitement in a small town. Especially when we explained, politely, to the nice sheriff's deputy that we had to burn the headless bodies that were still flopping around. He kept shooting them, but they wouldn't stop flopping. They just won't stop moving. How can they keep moving? Given that the house was filled with kerosene and the family was outside in their nightgowns trying to explain the unexplainable, then there was the explosion of the law to account for. And did I mention the burning truck, which got more spectacular when it got to the fuel tanks, and I'm really glad we got the girls out first. Oh, boy. This was a lot of excitement in a small town. I cut through some of the Gordian knots and walked into the house to use the phone. I pulled out my little black book of numbers and ignored MCB.
Go, the sleepy male voice said.
You had better have a damn good reason or balls of steel to call an FBI agent at home in the middle of the night. Hey, Special Agent Grant. This is Chad Gardenier from MHI. Remember me? I solved your case. 6 human perpetrators dead. Various undead perps deader as soon as we can convince the local authorities to let us burn the bodies. Whites and revenants just keep moving until you burn them. Oh, by the way, you're welcome.
I heard you raised hell with a certain subcommittee that doesn't exist, Don said, no longer half asleep.
For good reason, I said. MCB totally screwed the pooch on this one, which is why I'm calling you guys first. Can I go get the local yokel deputy and have him talk to you? I think the only reason he hasn't drawn down on us is we're better armed.
Don sighed.
Put him on.
Chapter 10. After we got back from Oklahoma, I requested another meeting with the select committee. No answer. Too bad. I wanted to rub their faces in my succeeding where the MCB had failed. For a little while, life returned to normal. A few days later, I was back in the team room when Sam Haven fielded a call from the SIU.
Giant pissed-off crocodile,
he said in a confused tone, looking at the note. In the 17th Street Canal, I finished, sighing. Bring a Barrett and some laws, just in case. Why Sobeck's always chose the 17th Street Canal was one of those mysteries of life. They turned up every few months and were major pains in the ass. I hadn't dealt with one since the new breed MCB had arrived and was so looking forward to it. We didn't know where they came from, how they got here, what they were doing here, or why a few times a year one tried to wander down the 17th Street Canal. But as per usual, the bipedal Egyptian crocodile god thing had gotten itself stuck on the main pumping station and was trying to climb the levee. Their bipedal form made it hard for them to do anything, really. They weren't pathetic by any stretch of the imagination. They were seriously dangerous up close, or if they got into the neighborhoods, but they frickin' always got stuck at the pumping station. When we arrived at the pumping station on Lake Avenue, there were some bystanders in the area watching the latest in New Orleans hoodoo. They weren't very many because it was late and the rain was keeping most people indoors. MCB was trying to chase off the witnesses, and Agent Robinson was in a heated discussion with an old woman up on the railroad track. It was clear that MCB was trying to get the crowd to disperse, but short of opening fire on them, that was unlikely to happen.
and SIU was being passive-aggressive about helping them out.
"Afternoon, Agent Robinson," I said, sauntering up.
"You will go back to your home,"
Robinson snarled at the old lady,
"or I will place you under arrest."
"This is a free country, young man,"
she shook her umbrella at him,
"and I will go wherever I damned well please. Are you going to arrest all of us?"
"From what I've seen, they're more likely to just machine gun the civilians and be done with it," Sam muttered to me.
"Lieutenant Wade," Robinson shouted, "place this woman under arrest."
"What do I charge her with, Agent?"
Wade said in a slow, somewhat dumb-sounding Cajun drawl. Local law enforcement missed Special Agent Castro's brand of leadership as much as I did.
"I really need a solid charge, Agent. The DOJ is all over our ass lately for all sorts of violations of civil rights. I mean, there's a whole task force."
"We are the DOJ. Just do it."
"Well, I'd really like to see that in writing." I interrupted the shouting fest and addressed the old lady. "Mrs. Tevna, how are you doing today?"
"These G-men don't have no respect," she said with a sniff. "Act as if you can pretend voodoo don't exist in New Orleans. Sell that to the tourists, young man."
"New brooms," I said, shrugging. "You know they lost all their good people at Mardi Gras."
"That is classified!"
Robinson shrieked.
"They'll figure out how it works sooner or later," I said, ignoring him. "Right now, we really need to just play along. Figure you can get these people to sort of wander away. Nothing new here to see anyway."
"Well, if they're going to do something, they should be finding out who keeps sending this hoodoo down here,"
Mrs. Tevney said angrily.
"This is the fifth time in a year and a half."
"I told you to place her under arrest."
"And I said I'd need something in writing," Wade said, crossing her arms. "Me and my department ain't gonna get sued 'cause you're all hot and bothered."
"I totally agree, ma'am," I said. "But in the meantime, do me a favor, okay? Try to get people to clear the area. Right now, we've got to get started on clearing this up."
"I'll do it this once as a favor, young man," Mrs. Tevney said. "But I'm definitely gonna call Congressman Bouvier. I pay my taxes."
"Any communication about this incident is a violation of federal law,"
Robinson snapped.
"If you so much as pick up the phone to call your congressman, I will, I guarantee you, arrest you. And you will spend the rest of your natural life in prison."
She was so old that probably wasn't that much of a threat.
"You ain't from around here, are you?"
Mrs. Tevney said, walking away. But she started chivying her people to clear the area.
"Just an FYI, Agent Robinson. Congressman Bouvrier is the second most senior majority member of the Select Committee, and her third cousin. She grew up with the congressman's mother. Might want to reconsider that threat."
"Just stay out of this, Gardenier, and you can just go back to your shack. We're going to clear this incident."
"Excuse me? Since when does MCB clear incidents?"
"Orders of Special Agent Campbell. We're taking responsibility for all yellow-level threats from now on. You cowboys make too much of a scene when you deal with something like this."
"Well," I said thoughtfully, "since we are read in, mind if we stay and watch?"
"Feel free," Robinson said. "We'll show you how a professional deals with this sort of thing."
"Oh, this is gonna be fun," I said as we walked back to my car.
"That agent is the easily agitated sort, ain't he? Now I'm wondering if he meant cowboys as a personal insult."
Sam thumped his knuckles against his ridiculous rodeo champion belt buckle.
"I'm wounded."
He went to retrieve his gear bag.
"First off, no point to the armor. With a Sobek, if you're close enough for the gear to matter, it don't matter. Thing will rip right through it or kill you by impact with its tail. So you get all hot for nothing."
"So how do you kill it?"
"We've done it enough times, we got a system. There's a kill spot on the back of the head that's about a foot across," I said, holding my hands up a foot wide. "You shoot it through there with something big, at a certain angle, Angle's important, too. What you do is get way back and shoot it there. If you hit it at the wrong angle or miss the spot, or hit it anywhere else on the body, it just pisses it off. If you hit it near the spot or at the wrong angle, you can cause it to thrash. As you can see, it's already damaging the levee. Enough levee damage in New Orleans floods. So getting it right the first time is sort of important.
Only that jittery rabbit-ass agent won't let us. Boy really needs to switch to decaf before he strokes out.
We make too much noise or something, I said, disgusted. So they get to kill it.
Isn't that sort of stealing our puff money?
Sam asked. I'm just hoping they get the shot right. The crowd had been duly shuffled off by SIU, NOPD, and Mrs. Tevney, and now the agent who'd been trailing Robinson was up on the railroad bridge with some sort of super-duper sniper rifle. The thing looked as if it had some sort of suppressor on the end, so, you know, they could pretend they weren't shooting a 50-foot bipedal crocodile. The real problem, though... No, I muttered.
What's wrong? Sam asked.
We were standing under the shade of a live oak, watching the proceedings, arms crossed. I'm pretty sure that's a 308, I said. Something along the lines.
It is, Sam said. That's an Accuracy International. It might be chambered in 300 Win Mag. Good rifle.
Whatever. Very much the wrong caliber. There's no such thing as too large with a Sobeck. There is such thing as too small. 50 caliber's the way to go with one. Too small, if anything. And I'm pretty sure they're going to fire it. The sniper took the shot as I was saying that, and the round hit the kill spot. But it was at the wrong angle, or maybe just didn't penetrate enough, and the Sobeck began to thrash and bellow, tearing at the bank of the levee. The local supervisor for Army Corps of Engineers ran onto the train bridge and started haranguing Agent Robinson as the sniper fired again. Having previously dealt with the guy, I knew he was understandably protective of his levee, because much of New Orleans was below the waterline, and if the levee ever broke, most of the city would be flooded a story deep. He really liked to keep water out of the city. What he did not like was Sobeck's tearing up his dams. He was really definite on that subject, which was what MCB was giving him. This time the round bounced off the armored skull, and the Sobeck got even angrier. It spun around in place, looking for what was hurting it, and decided that it must have something to do with the train bridge. Giant jaws clamped on one of the trestles, and it tried to death roll. The MCB sniper leaned over, rapidly working the bolt, and kept firing, bullets bouncing every which way. And from the looks of things, the bridge was probably going to have to be temporarily closed and surveyed to assess the damage. Assuming the pissed-off crocodilian didn't pull it down. I'd never seen someone as red in the face as the Corps guy. And from Robinson's attitude, he was giving a senior member of the Army Corps of Engineers the MCB, if you don't shut up, I'll arrest you line. That was going to go over just dandy. MCB might think it was powerful, but you didn't comprehend powerful until you dealt with the Army Corps of Engineers. I've seen enough, I said, shaking my head. Let's roll back to the team shack. I do not want to be here when this incident finally gets cleared and MCB is looking for someone to blame. We were about halfway back to headquarters when the phone rang. Gardenier, I said.
Who the hell did you call, Gardenier?
The voice on the other end snarled. No one. Lately. Who may I ask is calling?
This is Special Agent Campbell. So you're not responsible for calls from the Army Corps of Engineers and half the select committee?
Nope. We rolled to the Sobeck. Robinson told us you guys were handling it. We watched the beginning of said handling, then left. Didn't need to call anyone. Your guys did all the work.
turn around, go back, kill the Sobek, Campbell said, as calmly as he could manage.
No.
What?
Campbell shouted. The Sobek is currently pissed off, agitated, and very dangerous. It has been repeatedly wounded by your agents. MCB took responsibility for it, so you kill it. You want some advice on that? I can give it. But I already called Franklin, and MHI is not going to be blamed for another Class 5 incident. I got a click for my troubles.
I hear those things are worth a really nice puff, Sam pointed out.
There'll be another one in a few months, and they really would have used this to make us look bad. Campbell is a manipulative, conniving bastard, and his report would make us out to be incompetent, or at least very indiscreet. There's no clean way to kill that Sobek now that it's enraged. We were nearly back to the shack when the phone rang again. Gardenier, I said, as politely as I could. I figured it was Campbell again, or someone else yelling at me.
Chad, Congressman Bouvrier, how are you, young man?
Fine, sir, fine, I said, sliding smoothly into southern mode. And how is Bambi?
Curvy and beautiful as always.
Nobody could ever remember the names of the various paramours and trophy wives of the 70-year-old congressman, so he insisted everyone just call them Bambi. Saves time.
Are you taking another sabbatical, son?
I earned the one after Mardi Gras, but if you're referring to the Sobek, no. Just not taking that one.
Is there a reason?
The congressman asked. MCB took responsibility for clearing it, sir. They are taking all large incidents from now on, according to the agent on site. I wouldn't wish to steal their thunder.
They bungled it, the congressman said. Mrs. Tebney was watching the whole thing. I'm not sure if you heard, but they missed the shot. It's now out of the canal and rampaging through her neighborhood. She is rather unhappy. And since there is now a 50-foot crocodile wandering through New Orleans, I can't think of anyone who is happy.
I hit the brakes, did a U-turn, and hit the siren and lights. On it, Congressman. Mrs. Tevenet's on the west side of the canal?
Yes, she is, Congressman Bouvrier said. I'll take it you're on your way back.
Congressman, I really need a favor, I said.
If it involves getting MCB off your back, consider it done. When I'm done with this new special agent, his hide won't be missing a single spot that hasn't been scored.
There is no way, if the Sobek is out, we're going to be able to do it quietly. This is heavy weapons time and no joke. Campbell has to be made fully aware of that. Through the chain of command. He won't take it from you. And what we're going to have to do at this point will piss him off royally.
I understand, son. I'll make the calls.
We really need to get together again sometime soon, Congressman, I said. Dinner at my place?
You set a fine table, Chad, Congressman Bouvrier said. Why don't you have Remy call my people, look at the schedule?
Will do, I said, weaving through traffic. I made a left turn through a red light and hit my horn at someone who didn't know what a purple flashing light meant. Sort of need to hang up at this point, Congressman.
Understood. Good talking to you, Chad.
Sam, I snapped, handing over the phone. Call the office. Tell Franklin we need everybody. Full call out. Boots and saddles and every heavy weapon we've got. By the time we got back, the Sobek was two blocks up Lake Avenue. Looking down the long boulevard, it was one continuous scene of flipped cars, torn down power lines, and crushed homes. The crocodile was wandering from side to side, wreaking havoc in a more or less chaotic fashion, but steadily heading southward on the road. It had always seemed that the Sobeks had a destination in mind, but none had previously made it past the pumping station. This one, though, was determined to get to wherever it was going, and seemed equally determined to do as much damage as it could on the way. We'd stopped at the intersection of Lake and Purdue, and it was about a block up, just short of Narcissus. NOPD was trying to clear the area, but
people were being people. Gawking, fleeing, some of them in cars, some of them on foot. One guy was out in his front yard with what looked like an elephant gun shooting at the thing, which was just pissing it off more.
"I'll entertain suggestions here," Sam said.
"We're pretty well fucked," I said, getting out of the car. "Crocodilians can soak up an unimaginable amount of damage before they die. That goes for just about every kind. You can shoot them in the body all day long. They'll slowly bleed to death, but not fast enough. The only really good way to kill them is hit them in their remarkably small brain, which takes an angle you can't get from the ground, and especially from in front." I'd opened up the trunk and reached inside. "Time to read it the law," I said, tossing him one of the rocket launchers, which is going to, at most, slow it down.
"Two laws is only going to slow it down?" Sam said, fingers crossed.
We both hit the Sobek in the abdomen with the rocket launchers. This caused some of its guts to spill out on the road and knocked it down.
"Hell yeah!"
Sam yelled in a satisfied tone. Then the damn thing started struggling back to its feet. "Back in the car. Get on the phone. Ask Franklin when he's going to get here and how many heavy weapons he's got." The crocodilian was not particularly smart, but it could put very big rocket signature together with very big hurt and count to two, so it was now concentrated on catching Honey Bear, which was fine by me. I wasn't going to let it catch me, and chasing us, it wasn't going to do excessive secondary damage. The question was where to lead it to. My first preference would be back into the canal. They'd always had a hard time getting out. Their bipedal form was bad for climbing, and there was less damage they could do to people in there. Problem being, there was a fence along the canal and no bridges in this area. If I went over to the canal, we'd probably end up trapped up against it. That would be bad. Lake Avenue did not continue forever. It ended at Metairie Road, which was a fairly major cross street. There was a gas station at the corner. I vaguely considered luring it to the gas station, then blowing up the pumps. Two problems. First, pumps don't really blow up like they do in movies. Second, this was already a big enough incident, and whoever was currently on their ass, MCB would flip the fuck out. There was no place to lure it, no place to corral it that didn't involve more loss of life or a much larger presence. Except the Metairie Bridge. That was a bigger incident, but discreet had gone out the window when the fucking MCB sniper missed the fucking shot. Sam was still talking to Franklin on the mobile phone. "Tell him to park on the Metairie Bridge, east side." To get it into a kill zone, we needed to get it to follow us. I looked in the rearview mirror. The Sobek was tiring and didn't seem to want to chase us anymore. There was a large apartment complex at the corner of Lake and Burdue, and I didn't want it getting stuck in there. "Lean out and shoot that thing again."
"You're serious?" Sam said.
But he leaned back out the window and started shooting it with his Car 15 pop gun. The Sobek didn't seem to care. "We need something it will notice." I stopped the car and got out.
"It's sort of meandering this way still,"
Sam pointed out. "Seals," I said. "Sheesh, quit whining. Help me get Bertha out." We got the Barrett 50 caliber unpacked, the trunk closed, and the weapon in the front seat before the Sobek caught up. Just as I backed up, fast, it leaned over and clomped its jaws shut on where the car had been. But it also dropped on its face, so it took a bit for it to get back up, and it was pissed again. Then it tripped on some entrails and sprawled. I stopped to let it get up. "Keep shooting it," I said, as I honked the horn and flashed the high beams at it. "Make sure it knows it's us, and I'm going to take the next turn."
"Uh-huh,"
Sam said, taking the time to stuff some orange foam earplugs in. The Barrett is a huge, long, heavy, and generally unwieldy gun. Sam was a strong guy, but I suppose I couldn't expect him to just hang Bertha out the window like with his carbine. But it still pissed me off when he turned around in his seat, levered Bertha about, and smashed out my back window with the muzzle.
Hey, I just got Honey Bear out of the shop.
Now who's whining?
Sam said as he lined up the shot. Realizing that the ejection port was right next to my head, I hurried and got my muffs off the dashboard and pulled them on. Sam fired. A big shell casing spun past my face. The muzzle brake tore up my upholstery. Stuffing flew into the air. Poor Honey Bear. But that got its attention. The Sobek was back up and following us. I drove slow enough the Sobek could keep up. The big mobile phone started ringing, so I answered.
Chad, it's Franklin.
We're sticking and moving on this thing, getting it to chase us and ignore everything else.
Good. We're...
As Franklin said that, Sam let go with another round of 50 right next to my head.
What?
I yelled. The sound was deafening, and my ears were already ringing from the laws.
We're at the bridge!
I'm leading it back towards the canal. Going over to Orpheum, then I'm going to turn east on Metairie. I'm hoping it'll jump in around there and just head uptown that way. We might be able to get a shot in on it if it's down in the canal. Tell NOPD and SIU to close Metairie. Get set up on Metairie protecting the crossing if you can. We'll try to drive it into the water there.
We've got the laws and the Mardus!
Franklin shouted his answer. He could tell I was mostly deaf from the fire.
The MCB is going to shit a brick! We don't get this shut down quick, we're going to have hundreds of civilian casualties.
I yelled as Sam fired again. Checked the mirror. Still following us.
This is their abortion. We're just trying to fix it.
The Sobek, fortunately, was not particularly fast in normal circumstances and was having a lot of trouble with the spilled intestines. By the time I got off the phone, we were just to the intersection of Grenadine and Orpheum. Orpheum paralleled the canal and had a high iron fence to keep people from falling or climbing in. The Sobek could negotiate it easily, but I suspected it wasn't going to head straight for the water. And it didn't. It just kept following us as I made a slow turn south on Orpheum.
You got any more ammo for this?
Sam said.
There's more mags in the trunk. We'll stop again, get out, and get the rounds.
Just because you can ride next to the edge of the cliff don't mean you should, Chad.
What?
I'll just space them out more. Anything that'll soak up two laws like it wasn't even hit has my full admiration.
They're also tasty. Make a fine jambalaya.
I so don't want to know how you know that,
Sam said.
We used to have a Cajun sniper. Cajuns will eat anything.
When we got to Metairie Road, it had been blocked off by NOPD and Sheriff's Office. Good thing it was late at night, because otherwise it would have caused one hell of a traffic jam. The Metairie Road Bridge was the only way to cross the canal for a mile on either side. Franklin and most of the rest of the team were in the middle of the road on the far side of the bridge, setting up the M2 50 caliber machine gun, generally called a Mod Deuce. The team van was parked to one side, more or less blocking the side street that paralleled the canal on the east side, back open. I was pretty sure the Mardus was, for once, spitting in the wind. You could pepper a Sobek all day long with 50 cal and get nowhere. But they also had 6 light anti-tank weapons laid out. I pulled up next to the machine gun on the same side as the team van and got out. Metairie Road curved at the bridge, and I looked at the sight lines. Franklin was shouting orders.
If we don't force that thing to go in the water, we're going to have to hoof it.
The Sobek made the turn onto Metairie.
Damn, that is bigger and uglier than expected.
I went over, picked up one of the laws, and moved to the other side of the road to keep the backblast from interfering with the team. The Sobek was about halfway across the bridge. Franklin lit it up with the M2.
We started hitting it with the laws. Each round from the rocket launchers knocked it down. But then it got up again. Down, up. Down, up. If we'd been able to hit it from the rear, they might have had some effect. If we could hit it on the back of the head as it was swaying along in its ungainly walk. From the front, we were just tearing it up more, but not really stopping it. Knocking it down and slowing it was the best we could do. By the time we were out of laws, everybody switched to small arms. The Sobek had taken a lot of damage at that point. It had been hit by 8 weapons designed to take out light armored vehicles, the shots from the MCB sniper, and all the 50 that Sam had peppered it with. Speaking of which, Sam had gotten more ammo from the trunk and was adding to the carnage, firing Bertha off-handed. The Sobek finally decided it had had enough. The water to the side was inviting. It clumped over to the side and more or less fell off the bridge. "Bertha," I said, holding out my hand. Sam didn't want to give her up, but he handed her over. I ran onto the bridge and spotted the Sobek. It wasn't moving much, but I could tell that was because it was sort of resting up. Not dead, or even really dying quick. The amount of damage we'd done to it would kill it, eventually. But it could be ours. I considered the angles and decided I was at a decent spot for a kill shot. I rested Bertha across a railing. I'd have preferred being about 30 feet up, or that the Sobek's head was 30 feet closer, or that it would... The Sobek struggled to its feet. Again. It was ignoring us, clearly planning on continuing on to whatever its destination had been. But as it got to its feet, for just a moment, the angle was just right for a... I didn't even realize the seer had released until the boom, and the Sobek dropped deader than a doornail. It didn't even thrash once. One shot, one kill, baby. Hoorah for Marine marksmanship. That is how you are supposed to kill a Sobek. I looked over at Sam. The one shot, one kill thing? Not the shooting up half the city part.
Well, it took a while, Sam said, but nice shot.
Thanks.
Was it really necessary to use 6 rocket launchers?
Special Agent Campbell fumed. It was 8. I was packing up Bertha. I didn't even bother turning around.
8?
Campbell was furious.
Are you completely insane or are you a moron? Why the hell were you shooting it with rocket launchers when you yourself said they didn't work?
Because it was all we had. I was weary, getting rained on, and getting tired of having to replace car windows. Sobek stopped. Situation fixed. Scene cleared. Anything else, Special Agent?
Get out of my sight.
Have a nice day, I said, and left.
Chapter 11.
This is a pretty good ritual,
Sam Haven said, leaning back in the seat of Honey Bear and looking out over Lake Pontchartrain. I have a ritual for the full moon. I've talked about it before. I clean up myself and my gear. I go to confession, take communion. Then I have a really good meal with some really good wine. In this case, I'd taken Sam with me to K-Paul's, Chef Paul Prudhomme's world-famous hole-in-the-wall restaurant. We'd been in gear pretty much fully rigged out, so Paul was kind enough to let us sneak in the back and eat at the chef's table in the kitchen. Hot as hell, food was delicious. There were better places in New Orleans than K-Paul's, in my opinion, but Sam enjoyed it. Sort of. He didn't want to admit that he wasn't into foreign muck. But Prudhomme had gotten him over most of that by telling his backstory, because Paul came from a tougher background than Sam. According to the Catholic faith, I am now good to go for re-entry to heaven, I said. touches some minor venial sins, like checking out hot girls and, some would say, gluttony. But otherwise, I'm pretty good to go. I hadn't taken Sam along with me to church. I wasn't as close to him as Milo, but he knew about it.
So the number 57, that's like a religious thing with you or something?
It's a recurring sign. When I died, I was told to be on the lookout for the number 57. I found it symbolic. It's shown up in some damn weird places.
Sounds like nonsense. But that was a really good meal, Sam said, picking shrimp etouffee out of his teeth with a toothpick.
Based on experience with New Orleans full moons, always possible to be my last, I said. Full moons have been heating up almost back to normal. Fewer loop-garou since Earl took care of the assholes who were creating all the new ones. One good thing he did before he fucked us.
Earl's a good leader. You should get off his case. How was he supposed to know you guys would get attacked by an army of crayfish? On the scale of likely events, that's got to be somewhere to the left of getting anally violated by Gumby.
It's New Orleans. Weird shit happens. Then we got our first call of the night, and it was right next door. Speaking of which, we only had to drive for a minute before we heard the screaming through the open window. There was a 20-something girl running as fast as she could in high heels. And behind her was...
that a grinder?
Sam asked, looking at the thing on the shore. Frickin' moon's not even up, damn it! I snarled, getting out of the car. I'd even noticed the girl earlier as she'd walked by. She'd been with some redneck in a ball cap set on sideways. Pretty hot brunette. She was basically points with more chest and a few years off of her. The boyfriend appeared to be missing. Based on the human leg hanging out of the monster's... mouth? Boyfriend was in its gullet. I don't think that's a grinder, I said, heading to the trunk. The whatever it was looked more like a mobile pile of seaweed. Similar to a grinder in size and shape, but not the same. Just another monster. You see any grinder teeth?
No, Sam said thoughtfully. We made flashcards in newbie training, but I don't know what the fuck that is. I think it's dissolving that guy with something.
When in doubt, blow it up and burn it.
Help! Help! Oh, God! Help me!
Working on it, I said as the girl came running up to Honey Bear. The thing was squishing itself along behind her, but it didn't seem particularly fast. In classic horror movie style, it had probably slithered up while they were making out.
Please, my boyfriend!
She was out of breath. Working on it, I said, finally finding the right satchel charge. And, miss, I'm sorry to tell you this, but I don't think he's going to make it. And what I was about to do to stop that thing would make sure of it. Just let me do this, okay?
What are you going to do?
She and Sam asked more or less in unison. I just walked over towards the thing, swinging the claymore bag in my hand. When I got to within about 30 yards of it, the thing seemed to sense my presence. It was definitely using some sort of enzyme on the girl's boyfriend. The leg had stopped thrashing, and I could see a yellowish slime burning up part of the exposed leg.
Miss, Sam warned, you're gonna want to duck.
The monster seemed to be composed of some sort of seaweed. I'd been told that some seaweed was algae and not a weed at all. It came from the sea and was some sort of weed, so seaweed. I left the rest to marine biologists. I pulled the fuse on the incendiary satchel charge and tossed it on the monster. It stuck. The thing reacted by heading for me faster than before. I wasn't going to run towards Sam and the girl, so I headed across the street instead, fast as I could go in armor. Two reasons. One, I didn't want to get dissolved. Sounded like a nasty way to go. Two, I didn't want to get burned by my own satchel charge when it detonated. A really nasty way to go. Unfortunately, we were down the end of Breakwater Drive. Depending on how long it lasted, I was going to hit